life that you could take time to do, be at, and participate in. But I appreciate very much you taking the time to come and be with us tonight. Some of you that I did not get a chance to meet and be with last night, maybe we'll get a chance to do that this evening. But if not, I understand that there are probably some things that you may need to do before midnight tonight, so it wouldn't bother me, it wouldn't offend me if we didn't get a chance to speak. But I do know that there are several people out here that I did not get to speak to last night who are very good friends of ours, and they're at least under 18 years old, and they're all campers. Dinah and I, many of you know, are directors of the camp in Middle Tennessee, and several of you that are older than 18 have been there. And we are appreciative of the fact that we're able to see you again. And those of you that are under 18, we are very glad that you're part of that and hope that you'll continue to be a part of that. There are some things that we have discussed this afternoon with some young people this afternoon that I thought, in my mind, was very marvelous, and to hear them and the questions that they ask and the things that they have on their mind as it relates to them together as boyfriend, girlfriend, and even potential husbands and wives. And that's a very good thing. They're thinking about some things that might just be a problem, some kind of potential matter that could definitely separate them rather than bring them together. And those are things that need to be talked about and discussed. Tonight's going to be one of those lessons that needs a lot of attention. And I must tell you, it needs some time to pay attention to it. So let's begin in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15, where it says, "Look therefore carefully how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore be not foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is." There have been several instances in the life of a Christian where they need to take more time to do the good works of God. And in this passage, if Paul is addressing the Christians to be careful what they do, how they walk, not to be unwise, but as wise, and trying to buy up the opportunity because the days are evil, and then giving them strong admonition to say, "Wherefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is." If he is discussing that regarding people that are Christians and their daily walk with God and how valuable that is, to make sure they take every opportunity to be wise by virtue of knowing the will of the Lord, how much of that do you think would have any application at all to a husband and a wife and their marriage? That they should be careful what they do. They should be careful where they go. They should be buying up every opportunity as the time allows it, because the days are evil that surround them, and they should not be foolish in taking their marriage and just frivolously doing what they want to with it and not having any true respect and honor and regard for it, but they should be people who will understand what the will of the Lord is. Definitely there's some application to that to a marriage just as much as it is to an individual Christian, I would think. Well, sure. There's a lot of marriages that start out real anxious with a lot of eager anticipation of what they're going to do, what they're going to be. They're so excited. There's a lot of joy. There's a lot of energy that's there with those two people and all that they do. And then all of a sudden, for some unknown reason, it just diminishes. The flame has almost gone out, to the point that it's barely just flickering, to the point that they consider themselves and look at their marriage as just as an existence. They're there. He's there. She's there. You call him on the phone. "Oh, is he there?" "Yeah. I'll go get him for you." "Oh, is so-and-so there?" "Yeah, she's here. I'll go get her for you." And that's about the extent of the way some of those marriages are. But to talk to them about the things that are going on in their marriage, they don't talk about so much as the idea that they're lacking any time. They don't talk about the time that they're losing or not having. They'll just talk about how it is that their marriage is just one of those things that just kind of grown apart. They just don't have anything in common anymore. When in reality, it's time starved. they can't get together. They don't have time to get together. They are definitely so busy with all the other things and all the other matters that need that attention that they think it deserves. And as a result, they find themselves not connected, separated lives, independent. He does his thing and she does her thing. To translate their thought about what their marriage is or what they define it to be is really just simply to say, we're just not spending enough time together. Now, they may not necessarily say it that way, but they've got all these other issues that come along, and that's what really they think is a problem. But to resolve all those other matters that they think are crucial, that haven't really found themselves resolved, they don't know it takes a lot of time to resolve those things. It takes a lot of time to do that. Time and work. Two of the most major key ingredients to making a marriage one. We just don't think we have the time. And work, I'm working 80 hours a week. How much more work can I put into anything when I'm working 80 hours a week somewhere else? Do you know, and I know you do know this, that before you got married, there was not a moment that you could not get together. In the midst of all the schedules that you had, of all the appointments that you had, no matter what time of the day that appointment was, no matter what time of day that schedule was, whenever there was a practice, whenever there was this, and whenever there was that, it didn't matter. You worked around it, we would say. We worked around those schedules so that we could get together, so that we could find time, so that we would not lose connection with each other. We were going to, if we had it our way, we would make time. We would make time to where we could do what we wanted to do together, and we would spend minutes, no, we would spend hours with each other trying to make up for time that we lost because of the schedule, because of the appointment, because of where we had to be and whoever it was we were with. We made that time. Somewhere, somehow, and we're trying to figure out who did it. Something has taken away the time that we used to have. Somebody has taken away the time that we used to have. Something has done that to us. Who, pray tell, did that? What, pray tell, did that? What is actually snatching away the time that we should be having with each other? Well, ask yourself the question. How much time are you really giving to your marriage? If you want to put it in seconds, if you want to put it in minutes, you want to put it in hours, you want to put it in days, however you want to term it, what is it that we're doing with our time? How much time are we giving it? Or have we figured out that there really is something that's just absolutely snatching that time away? And there probably is. We think the world is involved in this vortex that's just spinning and spinning and spinning so fast that there's no one that can hop out of it. No one can jump out of the spin because they've so entangled themselves in it that they'll never get away from it. And lo and behold, do you know that there are people that are Christians that are in the middle of the vortex just the same? And they've found themselves in it and they're spinning fast just like everybody else is spinning. And they're disconnected with people that they once were connected to before. And not only that, those that they were once connected to before, they began to be isolated from them and withdraw from them and say, we just don't have anything in common. What is it that's really snatching our time away? And I'll tell you what, if I were to give all of the couples that are in this room this evening the opportunity to sit down and write a list of all the things that you believe are snatching your time away, I would think you could come up with that very, very easily. And the list that I'm about to give you may not even be on that list. And it might be, but it may not be. But you could come up with a list of three or four things for sure. And I want to tell you how vital this subject is. Remember the evaluation that I sent to you for you to fill out and for the elders to send back to us to know exactly what we need to really talk about and discuss this weekend? Well, 51 people fill out those forms. As I mentioned to you last night, 72% of those that filled out those forms said that the greatest challenge that their marriage faces is busyness and time management. 72%. So we're almost three-fourths of us are involved in this matter, where something is snatching away the time. One of those things I would suggest to you is the idea of greed, where we have to find ourselves with all the things that have been created by man to enjoy and to absorb and to have electronically, socially, whatever it would be. We need to have it. If it's going to give us the opportunity to have this kind of hobby or this kind of opportunity, then we're going to have all these things that everybody else seems to think that they've got to have. We're going to have it just like they do. Colossians chapter 3, verse 5 talked about the things that should be put away, one of which, he says, is covetousness, which is idolatry. If you look to the Old Testament, there is something that is stated in the book of Ecclesiastes that he mentions in this text here in chapter 2 about the man who had, we would say, had just about everything. And we won't be able to go through every one of these verses, but specifically in verse 10 and 11, he said, "Whatsoever things my eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withhold not my heart from all my joy, from any joy, for my heart rejoiced because of all my labor, and this was my portion from all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity, and a striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun." And you could read verse 17, verse 18, you could read verse chapter 4, verse 4 to verse 8, where it talks about how important it is that there is this cord that exists, where we come to be one, God, man, and the woman. We would refer to it as that in many instances when it comes down to marriage. But do we even have time to really bond ourselves together? Greed. The want for, or at least in our mind, the need for whatever it is that is at our disposal or purchasing power. And with all those things that we're having, and with the greed that we have to obtain those things, are we more successful? And as a result of being successful, is that what's going to hug us at night and hold our hand as we go to sleep? Is the success going to come to you and say, thank you for what you've done and all the time you sacrifice to become successful? I don't know that very many of us in this room are going to grace the front page of a magazine somewhere or a newspaper, unless we were to have committed a crime, a grievous crime of some kind. So therefore, there may not necessarily be any great achievement that we will ever find ourselves gracing the front page of a paper or a magazine somewhere or the internet. I don't know that we will really find ourselves coming along and saying that there will be this great position that I will have. Everybody will come up and shake my hand because I've achieved this position. Now, we may get some accolades from some people because of what we've done, but I doubt necessarily that we will find ourselves receiving all people's accolades because we have achieved this position. So therefore, this greed that people are really looking forward to having through their success, through their popularity, through their position, is not going to really work in our marriage. The only popularity and position that we're needing to really work on as it relates to our husband and our wife is at home. They don't care if you've graced the front page of the magazine. They don't necessarily care how much money you're making. They're not necessarily caring what your position is. They just want you to be with them. And with all the time that it takes to do those other three, we can't find ourselves with that most important person, our husband or our wife. It's also come to my attention that there is a sense of self-gratification that has brought us to the point where we are having time snatched away from us, from the one that's called our wife or the one that's called our husband. And these are preachers and elders and bosses. And these are teachers and these are counselors. These are coaches. These are doctors. These are lawyers. And all those people that do those things are people that are Christians. And they've given themselves to those particular areas of endeavor that would, we would all say were good works. No one would shy away from the opportunity to do those, nor would they be individuals say, well, that's not a good thing to do, because all those things are rendering service and help and aid and comfort and counsel, and they're assisting and they're advising and they're giving wisdom, and they're doing all those many wonderful things for those people. And we would say that that's a wonderful thing. Well, the people that are involved in those, that takes those times away from their husband or wife, they're receiving all the appreciation for all that's been done for them, and they spend more and more time in it because it's such gratifying endeavor. And while at the same time they're so into helping and leading and advising and mentoring all these other people, they have lost connection with the one that's most important to them, their husband or their wife. All good works. But God never said, take on a good work in order that you lose the affection, the attention, and the oneness with your husband or with your wife. If any man provide not for his own, especially those of his own household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Diane and I had the great privilege a few years ago to be trained to be facilitators for what was called and is still called Family Dynamics. And it's changed its name just a little bit. It's an 8-week course that couples would go through to discuss vital matters regarding their marriage. In going through this training, we were finding ourselves in different circumstances that would be very similar to the circumstances of which we would facilitate with certain people at certain times. And there was this one group that was there with us of about 15 or 20 people. And we were given the opportunity to stand up and talk about ourselves and or to confess anything that we would like to at that moment. There was this one family marriage counselor that stood up in front of all of us, and his wife was sitting about 2 or 3 rows back, and all of a sudden he began to confess that of the 30 years that he had found himself as a marriage counselor, he found himself at the same time losing connection with the woman that was the most important to him, called his wife. And at that moment in time, with tears rolling down both cheeks, he pointed to her and said to all of us that were there, today is the day that I will no longer find myself committed to the gratification that everybody else will give me because I've helped them, aided them, supported them, comforted them, and helped them through their difficulties. I now commit myself to you. And a marriage counselor, you would think, would know how important it is to be connected to his wife. The self-gratification sometimes has this tendency to overshadow the fact of what it is we're supposed to be doing. So therefore, we're going to have to spend some more time with the one that we said I do too. Another thing I think is very important to know, and that robs us or snatches away our time, is just misplacing all the priorities. Matthew chapter 6 verse 33 says, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. Ecclesiastes chapter 12 verse 13. The whole duty of man is to fear God and keep his commandments. And those two passages would be passages I say we probably would enunciate very, very clearly. And we would talk about them without qualms and shame, and we would talk about them with great clarity as to what we're to be doing as Christians. But let me just read something to you of a lady that's a Christian who's a school teacher. She said to me on the phone, I don't have time. We really do have time problems. We're working, two working people don't have time to sit and talk, much less study together. We are late from work, sometimes out of town, deadlines, and her final 5 words were this: we do not have time. And my immediate question to that was, well, what would you have time to deal with your marriage when your husband finds time to be with another woman besides you, when you don't have time to be with him? And the thing is, we are in a world where things have gotten to go, they've gone so much faster, so much quicker, so much easier, yet we're still finding ourselves with time constraints. If the company calls us and they ask us to do overtime, oh, I'm ready to go. If they talk about going somewhere over the weekend, just give me a few minutes or maybe a couple hours and I'll have all my bags packed and here we go. When we talk about this idea that we're going to get together with a family at any point in time in particular and we're going to meet up here, then we have no problem getting all those things ready and putting all those in line and here we go. So therefore, all these matters keep us so mobile, so apt that we can go all places, anytime, anywhere, but yet we don't put the priority where that should be. So much so that even if we find ourselves in all those circumstances that we think we should be with the overtime, with the family, with the travel, with all that, we take our cell phone with us. So therefore, when it rings, when it buzzes, when it clicks, when it does whatever, we're there to answer it in spite of losing the opportunity to be with those that we want to be related to most. Called her husband or called her wife. Two years ago, this past October, there was a lady, a Christian, that came to my sweetie, my wife, Diane, and she was very distressed, to say the least. She took her away after the service was over, took her into another room and said, I need you to pray with me and to pray for me. She had just recently took upon herself a new job without counting the cost of what all was involved in that job. It would take a lot more time. She was going to be a part of a social services group that would find themselves taking care of a lot of abused children. And at that would be so demanding that she would be called on 7 days a week at any time of the day. She had no idea. But she was very upset because she said, I'm losing connection with my husband. And she said, I'm losing connection with our children. They had two children. So much so that her son was crying for her to stay home, she said. She felt like she was failing at everything. She felt, though, that she was trapped to find herself in this job and to make more money because they had just bought a farm. They just bought a farm. A farm that she says we bought so that I want our children to be raised in the country. But if you're not there, what difference does it make? What difference does it make where the house is? Even if you want your children to be raised in the country and you bought this farm and you say you've got to work to pay for it, what difference does it make when you're not there? Another couple, both husband and wife, are Christians. This is what she stated. Talking about the idea of time constraints and how it is that priorities are misplaced, she said, as long as he... And this is a deacon's wife. He says, as long as he's married to me, we will always be in debt. Go back to number one, the greed. They were both glad to be at the end of the work week because both of them worked outside the home, she as well as he. They had no budgeting money management skills. Children were able to eat whatever they wanted to any time of the day. She, as a school teacher, structured as she was in trying to discipline the children at certain things that they would do during any particular point of the day in instruction, but she had no idea as to what they were going to eat every night with her husband, or her children. So priorities are all out of kilter, we would say. If you give opportunities to people to give you a list of 1, 2, 3, what are the priorities of your life, we will definitely answer the question correctly every single time. 1, God. 2, family. 3, me or job or all those other things that may be included in number three. So therefore we've got God, family, and everything else. 3, 4, 5, and 6. We got all that down. Yet when we can't find ourselves involved in all the things that we need to be doing, to the point that, as in the case that I mentioned to you just a little bit earlier, our son is crying for us to stay at home, and we say, hey, we don't have time for all these other things that need to be going. Let's just establish one clear thing. And if you remember anything, remember this. If you fail at your marriage, everything fails. Everything. And your boss is not going to come up to you and shake your hand because you gave them 50 hours of overtime in the last 3 weeks while you are working on trying to get your wife to come back home because she's gone off somewhere and you're separated. He's not going to shake your hand because of that. And your children are not going to hug you around your neck because you've given them the opportunity to do anything they wanted to do, plus any sport that they could ever name that they could participate in. And they're not going to hug you around the neck when you and your wife, you and your husband are divorced within a few years after those days are gone. It's very important to know that there's a tendency for us to look at all these situations and all that goes on and think that here's the solution. All we need to do is just balance things better. And if we can balance things better, then we find ourselves in a better position to do the things that we should be doing. That's what we really need to do. We just need to balance things better. Okay, let's just try this. Okay, if you try to balance this, and the tendency is for that topness to be a little bit heavy, you're going to have to go everywhere that broom's going to be going so that you can keep it balanced so that it won't fall over. So whatever is over in this hand has to be dropped. It has to be removed so that you won't let this fall down and make a mess. But as long as we can keep it balanced, then therefore everything seems to be okay. As long as we can do that, everything will be okay. So therefore, that's our solution to the dilemma that we're having. Let's just balance things out. But let's just keep it up there while everything else goes aside, including our marriage. But when we say what we say about this ideal balance, do you know what we're really saying? Balance is doing as many things, having as many things, planning as many things without it all falling over. Balance is a term to describe a priority that we have not made. And everything is spinning, or we've got everything trying to be balanced up here, including our marriage is one of them. And when one of these plates doesn't spin very well, we spin it again and we get the next one and we get the next one. Just like that trick they used to do way back, about 20 different sticks with plates up on them, and they want to have every one of them spinning and having every one of them balanced so that way everything would be okay. That's exactly what we're doing with our marriage. We're trying to balance it in a term that we haven't made a priority with. But we say we've got the skills. There's a dad that came to me a few years ago. And he told me, he said, if there's any one thing I wish I could do over, this is a man that's a Christian, I'd be more spiritual. And if I was, maybe my children would be Christians too. And this is a man that had power, maybe I should say position, on popularity and materialism. But we have that ability to sacrifice. Or balance, I should say. But the most important thing that needs to be considered is the first casualty to the idea of busyness is spirituality that we talked about last night. Now, we will talk about the book of 1 Corinthians. Excuse me, I went a little bit food. Yeah, okay. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 58. Wherefore, beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. And we will talk about Galatians chapter 6, verse 9, where it says, let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. And we will enunciate those things very clear about how it is that this is the kind of person we should be. But I want to read to you something of a reality that exists in a marriage. Alan says, he's the name of the husband, it would be wonderful to sit down with my wife and children and read and pray and talk about God. But when I get home from work, I'm tired. I get up early, 5 or 6 o'clock, and go wide open all day. When I get home, it's all I can do to go to the bathroom, wash up, and get to the dinner table. Don't think I'm selfish, because at the table, I want to hear about my wife's day and our children's day. After supper, I help Melissa clean the table, then have a little TV time to rest my bones, then get the children baths and in the bed, then I go to bed. With all that, have I got time for devotion, pray with my wife? I'm lucky to have my own prayers before I fall asleep. Now that's Alan's observation. Now listen to Melissa, his wife. I know Alan works hard. I appreciate it, but I work hard too, keeping house, taking care of 2 children, attending PTA meetings, taking them to ball practice, and when I get supper, I'm bushed like Alan. After supper, he sits in front of the TV wearing out the remote control from 7 until time to kiss the children goodnight before 9, then in bed watching TV until he falls asleep. The children have their homework. When he gets home from work, he has 2 hours to teach them a Bible story or pray with us. Once a week would be wonderful, but he doesn't even do that. I know he could pray with me after they are in bed. I just don't think he cares about it. He claims being tired. I think he is spiritually lazy. Both people, same house, same children, but 2 perspectives of what's going on. That kind of tells you the difference between men and women right off the bat. But it also tells you where the priorities are. What they're trying to do. Or are they trying to do anything? I had a man call me back in February of this year, telling me about his wife's obsession with Facebook, to the point that she was on it, as he termed it, all the time. She found this guy up in Indiana, got connected to this guy, and lo and behold, had a very interesting rendezvous in Bowling Green, Kentucky, of all places. And he's from down in Tennessee. And both of them were Christians. And he even told me the very same thing regarding just like this couple. He admitted that there was a problem with this busyness and time management going on in their own marriage. Let me just mention something to you that I thought was very interesting. A few years ago, we had a beginning of a marriage class in the congregation where I was, and it was going to be once a month for 12 months. It would be maybe an hour, hour and a half class. And at that moment in time, I thought, well, when they all attended for the very first time, we had 14 couples that were there. And I thought, man, this is going to be marvelous. We're going to have a good number. Well, it went on. And as the time went on, there was a fewer group of people that showed up, to the point that it wound up being at the very last class period, which was, we started in January, ended up in December. There were only 2 couples. At the class. Got an email from one of those couples that said, the few days that my husband and I had many points of contention that were not there when we weren't digging deep beyond our obstacles, sometimes maybe we should just accept those things and love each other through all that. Not that we don't want to be close to God, we're working on that at home as well. In case it has escaped your notice, we have not been able to attend the classes as we should. We're not very organized. We haven't been able to run things very well and so smoothly at home that will allow us to be prepared so that we could be there. After many failed attempts to make it, even though I was working, we have decided that we need to just relax, work on things at home, minus the stress. Thank you for the class. We appreciate the effort. Maybe over time, we will be able to straighten things out and be a more normal family. That's the way she stated it. What we're talking about tonight, friend, is what is normal. Exhaustion, spiritual laziness, busyness, time constraints, and all those things. And as you work your way through, and if you're one of these people that seems to think that everything's going to be balanced, we're going to balance this thing out, please know, in the process of this, when you get to that point that you think you got it all balanced out, please know the responsibilities that are still biblically found that are there waiting for you to fulfill. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25 to verse 28. Husbands, you're still going to be assigned the responsibility to be a leader. If you've lacked that responsibility, if that's not been a priority, and you're not exercising that fully as you should be, when all that is balanced out, still that's going to be there. And even if you don't balance it out, it's still there waiting on you. So therefore, who are you going to let down? Your wife, God, or yourself? Or the world, because you can't keep up with them. And at the same time, ladies, the responsibility in the midst of all that you try to do to balance it and all that you try to do to work with your husband in balancing things, please know and understand that the responsibility for you is just there waiting you on you just as much as it is for the husband. The book of 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1 to verse 5, it's still there. The help, the submission, everything else that goes with your responsibility to be discreet, to be a woman of the heart that will dress itself appropriately in the eyes of God, honorably, respectfully, godly, biblically. All those things are going to be still there waiting on you even if you don't balance things out. Who are you going to disappoint? God, yourself, your husband, or the world? It's very important to know that the casualty of marriage is first spiritual. Okay, now here we at the point of what are we going to do? What are we going to do? We're in the middle of a marriage class at Southside right now in a different angle from what we did maybe about 4 years ago. And one of the things that came up in that was the idea of how it is that you can make time for your husband, how you can make time for your wife, okay? That was a question that was brought up to us, to me in the class. Okay, we're going to talk about that at this moment. When we talk about this idea of how we're going to make a focused marriage in a busy world, first of all, we need to make sure we remove all the distractions. Whatever they may be, if they're people, if they're schedules, if they're electronics, whatever they are that's getting in the way, we need to make sure we get all those out of the way. Because, see, we've come to the realization that he is so checked out, he is not listening to what I'm saying, he doesn't understand, and she doesn't pay attention. That's our dilemma, that's the questions, that's the statements we make. Therefore, are we willing to do everything we can to remove all the distractions that will prevent us from saying, he's so clueless? Are we going to get rid of all that? We have to remove all those things. Then we find ourselves at the point that we're going to be able to pursue God first. It's kind of the priority issue as Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33 talks about. When the trouble strikes, the natural focus is for us to focus on the person that is not providing me with what I want. The husband or the wife, whatever the case may be. Rather than paying attention to focus upon Jesus Christ and make the choices that he wants us to make and seek his kingdom first. And develop within our heart what love and patience and kindness and meekness and humility and all those things that we would characterize a Christian should have. Allow those things to be part of our life as a disciple and let those flow naturally over into the relationship that we have as husbands and wives. Pursue God first and also find ourselves looking at the good and not the bad. We looked at all the good things that this person was back before we married him. I don't know unless they've just gone off the deep end that all those good things have just absolutely evaporated. They're probably still there. We just don't see them. We see all the bad. But it's so important that when you look at the book of Philippians chapter 4 verse 8, that's your contact list. Just like your contact list in your book, in your phone, your contact list when it comes down to who your spouse is, there's something true about them. There's something pure about them. There's something honorable about them. There's something just. There's something in them that brought you to them first. So therefore, go back and look at the good, not all the bad. Not she can't. And not he can never. And then find yourself in the position where you will give at least two good compliments a day. I would suggest more than that, but I think let's just start very basic and let's talk about two good things. Because there are some instances where there are spouses that can't even provide one, much less two. Let no corrupt speech proceed out of your mouth, but let that be which is to the good of edifying, that it may give grace to them that hear. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29. We need to talk about to this person in favor of what they've done for us that day. You get rid of the busyness when you find yourself touching those that you compliment. The book of 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 verse 21 says it very clearly, hold fast that which is good. Now, I don't think he's really talking about marriage there, but let's just talk about that from the context of marriage, and let's talk about what physical touch does. Holding, kissing, hugging, rubbing shoulders, cuddling, all those wonderful things that you would do as a husband and a wife. And those particular moments when you touch them, it's very hard for you to find yourself arguing with them. There is a situation where when those things happen, that you have a great tendency to work on your relationship at that moment. There's something that was invented a long time ago that I absolutely despise. Bucket seats. I don't like those bucket seats because I'm away from my sweet woman. I cannot get to her. I can reach over there and she can touch me, but I can't get as close as if there was not a bucket seat. I remember a couple when I was living in Savannah, Tennessee, a couple that I don't know at that time might have been married as long as we are now. But I remember them, and I kid you not, there were no bucket seats then, but I kid you not, it's almost as if she was driving the car and he was sitting in the driver's seat. That's how close they were. You barely could see her head. And I'm thinking, if you're married that long and you can get so close to each other, then I could do the very same thing. But somebody came along and made bucket seats, messed up the whole project for me, messed it all up altogether. But please know the value of touching. And I think it's important to know that when we work on this idea of trying to focus our marriage, we find ourselves focusing on each other at least 10 minutes a day. Once upon a time, there was this big infomercial that came out. It talked about a 10-minute workout. 10-minute workout, you do this, you do this, you do this. And you do it for 30 days, and the next thing you know, you lose this weight, and you feel much better, and you feel more comfortable, and you've got more energy, and all those kind of things. Well, the same thing might just very well be true when you talk about with your own marriage. But there's one key ingredient to this 10-minute workout. You're going to have to schedule it in some cases because some people can't even find the 10-minute sliver of time to do this. Before supper, after supper, in between this, in between that, before bedtime, you find yourself even leaving earlier from work to come home and participate in this 10-minute workout or 10-minute touch time that you give. Back porch swing, front porch steps, on the couch, wherever it may be, because you cannot find yourself just automatically and luckily finding, okay, we got 10 minutes, go. There have been couples that have said to us, we just don't have time. I said, okay, let's make a schedule. Let's make a schedule. What time of the day works? We started at 6 o'clock. We worked our way down. 6 o'clock? Nope. 7 o'clock? Nope. We're all at work. Okay, what about 4 o'clock? Nope. 5 o'clock? Nope. 6? Nope. 7? We finally got to 9 o'clock. And they had two children. 9 o'clock will work. 9 o'clock will work. Okay? Okay, I said, let's start with a starting time at 9 o'clock. And nobody gets out watches. Nobody gets out phones. Nobody puts a timer to it. Let's just start at that time. Do not say we will go 10 minutes, even though you may want to start there. But who's a real good teller of time without using a watch or any kind of device? Oh, I know when time's up. Just start and let the end time take care of itself. And just continue that for 30 days and you will see the time will increase to the point that you will find yourself maybe even close to midnight or past it in some cases. You may get tired the next day, but let me tell you something, folks. You can catch up on your sleep, but you cannot catch up on your love. Because once the love is gone and the time to do it is not there, you cannot get it back. So therefore, it comes down to this point right here. Marriage needs what we talked about in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15 to verse 17. It takes T-I-M-E. Together, an interest in your spouse, making it and eliminating all the distractions and the hurry that sometimes finds itself in so many relationships. The way in which we find ourselves in a focused marriage is we find us getting away somewhere at least twice a year. Three would be great, but let's just start with two. And this is going to be for all of you older couples out here in this audience that have no children at home. If you see a couple that needs time away, they've got one, two, three, or four children, and you can be the one who will interrupt their busy schedule and say, we will give you free nights, baby care if, or child care if you bring them to our house and you and your husband go away, or you go home and it all be free. I challenge couples that are older with that opportunity to be of help to the couples that need more time. And it's important to know that whenever you're going to focus on each other, you've got to have a servant spirit. That's got to really permeate your heart, like Galatians chapter 5 and verse 13 says, a servant's heart should. We should have that servant heart. And we should be the people who will find ourselves in a position where we'll understand all those one another passages in the Bible. And that there is a particular place and a particular time where you can confess one to another, be hospitable to one another, be kind one to another, forgive one another, bear with one another, and the list goes on and on. You can find a place where you can do all those one another passages somewhere that you give yourself that time. It connects you with those people. Called your husband, called your wife. You see, that's what happened in the book of Acts, the second chapter, verse 44, 45, and 46. When those brethren got together on a daily basis, they found themselves with the opportunity to be with one another and to execute what God asked them to do with one another, and they became closer. The strength was there. In the midst of all the difficulties that they may face later with false doctrine or persecution in any shape, form, or fashion. Please know that we find ourselves in a position that we will need to defend ourselves from all the attacks that are placed upon marriage. Because when you start wanting to have more time with your husband or with your wife, please know that there's going to be somebody. It could be your family member, it could be your friend, it could be a coworker, and it could be somebody else associated with the world will say to you, you're crazy. I can't understand why you're giving so much time to that. I don't see the importance. Don't you know that your wife is always going to be there? Don't you know your husband's always going to be there? Isn't that what you married him for? They're going to be there. Why are you working toward getting extra time to do these kind of things? Why is it that you want a day off to do this? Why is it? Because there's so many people in this world that want your life to be so individualistic and self-satisfying that they don't want you to be a part of anybody else's life. They want you to be a part of your own existence and your own ego and your own pride and your own selfishness, doing your own thing. That's what they would rather you do. They're critical when you do the things that God is asking for you to do. So therefore, prepare yourself from all the attacks that people are going to put on marriage. And definitely do this one that I talked about last night, and you pray together for and about each other. Every single day. Spend the time. It's worth every second. Every second. I've got some bad news for you. And that is, time clicks away. It goes fast. But you and I can be the one that will oversee it. For those of you that are in this audience this evening who are dads and moms, you need to take time for what you as a husband and a wife took time to be before you became to be mom and dad. Isn't it wonderful to know that our God took the time to plan before the world ever began of a way to save man's soul? And even in the midst of all the things that happened in the world, in the beginnings, days and years of the world, he did not let that interrupt what he had planned to do. It did not distract him. He still had in mind what he was going to do with his son Jesus. And here's the most interesting thing about that. When Jesus came upon the scene, in the midst of a busy world, as most people would know the ancient world to be at that time, political turmoil, immorality, paganism, idolatry, and all those things that could distract Jesus from his mission to be the Savior of the world, Jesus was not going to be distracted. Because in John chapter 4 and John chapter 5 and John chapter 6, he reiterated how important it was that he do the will of the one who sent him. Therefore, none of that was going to distract him. And thanks to God that he was not distracted by all the things in the world that would bring about our salvation. What would it be if you became to be an individual that was a Christian? As a result of what God did and planned in the very beginning of time. I'll tell you this, it will be a wonderful addition. It will be a wonderful compliment. It will be a wonderful thing to have added that to your marriage, that you decided to follow Jesus Christ. And if there's anything that your marriage needs more, it's for you to be a Christian. One that follows the Lord and focuses that priority upon what your responsibilities would be to him in the kingdom. So therefore, repent of your sins and confess in Jesus as the Christ and be baptized in the water back here so that all would be removed and that you would be clean. Please know that there will be some people that will distract you and there will be some things that will distract you. Don't let that happen. Do what's right while together we sing this song.